Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Steelers got a local new linebacker added to the roster, but what does that do for the linebacker room that has been the group that everyone said needs to be addressed the most by Omar Khan? We'll talk about that, the releasing of Anthony Miller, and how that impacts the wide receiver room and what's going on with the Pirates as they head down to play the Marlins in Miami. It's Chris Carter here, your host of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We've got Brian Bacco and Andrew Dessen. It's going to be a fun show. Let's get into it.
You are now listening to the North Shore Drive Podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter.
Hello, welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, where you can find all our content at post-gazette.com, but you can always find all of our YouTube and podcast content on your favorite podcasting app, but also on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this channel to get our Monday, Wednesday, and Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast, as well as our daily content that comes out from here. Episodes with Paul Zeiss, episodes with Noah Hiles, lots of different people that come on this channel. And as well, we now have Brian Bacco, one of our esteemed Steelers beat writers here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Brian, there's been some moves this week, some lighter moves, not like, you know, world-breaking or anything, but I want to...
Wait, Chris, we've got a playoff game in Pittsburgh football this weekend. The Maulers
what?
Are in the USFL playoffs. They are hosting a playoff game in Canton. But yeah, I thought we were just going to spend this whole show talking Maulers and their big breakthrough in 2023.
Pittsburgh Maulers, my goodness.
I did just see also, like, I think their head coach this year is Ray Horton, former Steelers.
Yeah.
Distant, and his son, Jaron Horton, is the defensive coordinator for the Maulers, and he was the USFL Defensive Coordinator of the Year. So shout out to extended member of the Steelers family.
Well, look at them. They play 8 p.m. Saturday. You can watch it on NBC as they take on the Michigan Panthers coming up here. So that'll be exciting. Check that out there.
On a serious note, we'd be remiss not to mention Clark Hagen's former Steelers outside linebacker.
Yes.
Died at 46 on Monday in Fort Collins, Colorado. Obviously, a guy who helped bring a lot of great memories to people watching this and our readers, longtime Steelers fans. And it was probably never came up bigger than that Super Bowl 40 run. That was his best season as a pro. And probably no coincidence that that was also a year that the Steelers got over the hump. So rest in peace to Clark Higgins.
Indeed. And it was a very touching note from Joey Porter Jr. called him Uncle Higgins or Uncle Clark for all the things that he did for him. You know, Clark Higgins and Joey Porter Sr. Were huge pieces of that Super Bowl 40 team for the Pittsburgh Steelers. That was sad to see Clark.
I think they were even roommates at Colorado State and then obviously went to play together as bookends for the Steelers. And I remember that now, like, when Joey Porter Jr. was drafted and he was talking to us on the South Side that night, he was mentioning some of the former players. And he, you know, of course, he brought up the usuals like Troy Polamalu and Antonio Brown. But he also said Clark Higgins, which, yeah, that's no surprise when you figure out how close his dad was with him. And I think Higgins also has a son around Joey Porter Jr.'s age that those two played together on the practice fields back in the day. So, yeah, very, very sad news in the Steelers world this week, just 46 years old.
Indeed, that was very sad. They're talking about that. But let's move on to news about the roster right now. And there was a move made this week. Nick Kwiatkowski, a linebacker from Bethel Park, a local guy, was signed to the Steelers. Scott Nelson, the safety, was released. We'll get to the Anthony Miller release in a bit here in the second segment, but I want to focus more on this addition here because Kwiatkowski, he's a 30-year-old veteran. He's been in the NFL for years. He's bounced around quite a bit from like two or three teams. But, Brian, I look at this move, and this seems very much like another Tanner Muse type of addition here. Maybe an upgrade on Tanner Muse, but like this isn't a guy who's going to push for time from Cole Holcomb and Landon Roberts. And if you're asking me, that still needs to be the biggest thing that's added to this roster right now, because those guys are fine as like solid run stuffers, but they still don't have a cover linebacker. And I know they have Keanu Neal who they'll drop down to help there, but I still feel like they need another guy that's going to be the line before Kwiatkowski and Mark Robinson and Tanner Muse are being called into action with this defense.
I don't know that you're going to find that guy at this point of the calendar, especially for what somebody like that would cost. And I just think the type of player that you would land now, I mean, is he going to be a huge upgrade over what you have? Is he going to be somebody who's worth kind of stunting the development of Mark Robinson? I mean, I really like Mark Robinson, Chris. And I know that Terrell Austin sort of, tamped down the hype about him a little bit the last week at minicamp, saying he's really not in line to be a starter yet. And I didn't think he would. I mean, if he was, you don't go out and sign Holcomb, who I think they've got pretty big designs on him wearing the green dot and being that communicator in the middle of the defense, all situations guy. I think Landon Roberts more of that bridge to the next player, but maybe that next can be Mark Robinson. And, you have to love his athleticism as a former running back. You've got to like, his ferocity that he plays with. Can he learn the defense enough to be, your best coverage guy? Remains to be seen. Well, all we really saw him do as a rookie was be a downhill thumper at that spot. But the Kwiatkowski news, I think if anything, he's competing with Tanner Muse to be number four depth and, top special teamer. And that's what he did last year in Atlanta. The Falcons didn't use him at all on defense. I got to say, if you couldn't get on the field for the 2022 Falcons, I don't love your chances of doing it here in Pittsburgh. But at the very least, cool story with a local guy who played at Bethel Park in West Virginia, getting a chance to go through training camp with the Steelers, assuming he makes it to Latrobe and sticks around for a little bit.
Yeah, I feel you on that. But other guys I think they could legitimately look at. They brought in Quan Alexander. Nothing happened there just yet. I still think he would be a better option than that. I still think Deion Jones would be a better option than that. He's still a free agent, and he played pretty well for the Browns last time he played. And I still wonder, people have brought this up before, but the potential of an Isaiah Simmons trade that, somewhere down the line, didn't get his fifth-year extension with the Cardinals. They've been on a fire sale lately with DeAndre Hopkins being now out on the market. I feel like that is the one spot that if they can get, and they don't have to be an elite cover linebacker, but just one who's maybe a little bit better than the ones they have now to give themselves at least more of a rotation with that group. Because as it stands, this reminds me of the 2018 Steelers of when they brought in John Bostic. He was fine. He could stuff the run, but as soon as teams realized, oh, we should throw at him, it became the weak point of the defense, and it led to some big problems for them down the stretch when they missed the playoffs that year. And I'm not sure if it'll be that big of a problem with the other talent on this defense, but it could be a weakness that exploits this group when otherwise they would be doing pretty well.
It could be, and I don't necessarily disagree with you there. I'm not sold on the inside linebackers. I've been saying that here. Mm-hmm. I've been writing that in my chats and my mailbag since the free agency period opened in March. But I just think that the Steelers obviously view them differently, because guys like Quan Alexander and Deion Jones could have brought them in. They've been able to do that for a while now, and yet they put their chips on Cole Holcomb and Landon Roberts. And I think, more so on Holcomb. Obviously, maybe we are underrating him to a degree because we just didn't see him out there on the field much other than individual drills in OTAs and in minicamp. And they did say that they would take him slow after that surgery that ended his 2022 season and his tenure, with the Commanders. So, I think in their ideal world, they trust that he can be that three down linebacker in the middle of the defense, be a souped up Robert Spillane, be a better kind of Devin Bush to go. We don't need to cycle through all the names that didn't work in that role. But Isaiah Simmons with the Cardinals, that'll continue to be kind of one of those interesting little things to keep in the back of your mind. I guess he technically considers himself a DB now. Is that what I saw out of Arizona minicamp? He's kind of like more of a nickel corner, but he's just a hybrid player. And, you know, he hasn't been great to this point in his NFL career. Maybe somebody like that needs a change of scenery, or maybe he's just the Cardinals version of Devin Bush, who, you know, they kind of bet on a fast, undersized linebacker, and his game's just not going to translate to this level.
It certainly looks like that's going to be the concern moving forward. We'll talk more about some other moves that they've made along with the releasing of Anthony Miller and what that means for the wide receiver group. Here on the North Shore Drive podcast, stick with us. We got Brian Batko on to keep talking about that. But first, before we go anywhere else, I want to talk to you guys about our great sponsors, GameTime.co. It's a website that you can go to buy tickets for your favorite events and make it not stressful, because GameTime is the fast and easy way to buy tickets for all your favorite sports, music, comedy, and theater events near you. You get killer deals on last-minute tickets, and they have a best price guarantee that can't be beat, so that you can stop stressing about the tickets and start getting hyped for the fun that you're about to have. The Game Time app allows you to book tickets even up to the last minute if you didn't plan out far in advance, and it helps you find events. If you missed on it, they're still going to have exclusive flash deals up to the last minute, the day of, on tickets events for football games, basketball games, baseball games, concerts, comedy, theater events. All those are available in the Game Time app that you can download right to your mobile device. And the Game Time guarantee means that you'll always get the best price. If you can go out and find tickets in the same section and same row for less, for the same event, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference on your tickets. Snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PITTPIT for $20 off your first purchase. Go to their website, GameTime.co. Terms and conditions apply. Create an account and redeem code PITTPIT for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Back here on the North Shore Drive podcast, Chris Carter, Brian Batko, bringing things down on the Steelers. Brian, the Steelers released Anthony Miller this week, and he kind of predicated with a thank you Pittsburgh tweet with a heart on it, and everyone was kind of like, well, I guess that means what that means, and now you see him leaving the wide receiver room. But Anthony Miller was a guy who last year, when you guys were covering training camp, that he was turning heads until he got injured, was out for the year. And it seems like now he's never going to get that chance to really show what he was putting together last year in training camp. But you still have what I think is a crowded wide receiver room of guys that are looking to prove themselves lower down the depth chart. We know the top four guys. It's going to be Deontay Johnson, George Pickens, Allen Robinson, Calvin Austin. They're on the team. But guys after that, you still have Gunnar Olszewski. You still have Miles Boykin. You still have Hakeem Butler. You still have Jordan Bird. You have a lot of guys that are a very different in skill set. Olszewski, more of a route runner. Boykin, more of a special teamer. Butler, a big, fast guy that can go up and get the ball. And Bird, who's the speedster of the group. What is your outlook on how this is going to play out with how the Steelers want to use the bottom of their wide receiver group?
Yeah, I was a little surprised that Anthony Miller was on the chopping block. I guess now, you know, I didn't anticipate that he was at the bottom of the totem pole at wide receiver, let alone the entire 90-man offseason roster. But I think it's, you know, probably partially health. You know, he just could not stay on the field. He obviously missed all of last season with that shoulder. They did keep him around, so it told me that they were interested in continuing to do business with him to some extent. You know, he's an NFL guy. I mean, he didn't really get a chance to show it in games here. He only played once in 2021, but it seemed like he was really building a rapport with Kenny Pickett. He already had it with Mitch Trubisky from Chicago. So if anything, Chris, you know, it tells me that the Miller is only going to make this team as a pure receiver, as somebody who is going to help on offense. He's not a returner at this point in his career, I don't think. Late 20s, he's not going to go down and cover kicks and punts the way Miles Boykin or even Gunnar Olszewski can do. So the fact that they let him go, that could be a good sign for somebody like Calvin Austin and what he's going to be able to contribute here in year two after missing his whole rookie season. It could be even a good sign for somebody like Allen Robinson health-wise, that they're comfortable where he is in his recovery. So if you're holding out hope that Miller was going to kind of make this team as wide receiver five and, you know, be an occasional piece, you know, that's out the door. But it could mean good things for some of these other players who they don't feel like they need to have Miller behind them, because they could have easily cut a Cody White or, like you said, a Hakeem Butler coming over from the XFL. But, you know, they want to see more out of him. They clearly want to see more out of the undrafted guy you mentioned, Jordan Bird, who I think he'll be fun to watch in training camp and in the preseason games. And I think if you pay attention in Latrobe, I think the other offensive guys like to do a little bird call when he makes a play, like a little. So that'll be interesting. And he could come on as a kick returner. We'll see what happens there. But the Anthony Miller experiment has ended, and we'll see if it goes anywhere for him in the rest of his NFL career. It'd be difficult at this point, but they're rolling with the rest of the crew there at receiver.
Is the answer to who's going to fill there, because we also don't know if they'll go with five or six wide receivers, but is the answer to who's going to get the job there really who's going to help out on special teams? Because this is a special teams unit. They lost a lot of people over the past year, guys like Derek Watt and Robert Spillane, guys who had been regulars for Danny Smith in the special teams unit. They're gone, and so they're looking for guys who can fill the void there, whether you're a return man or just a gunner or a guy that's on kickoff coverage or punt coverage. I think those are really valuable roles, and I feel like that could have an impact who makes the five and potentially six final receiver slots.
Yeah, of course, that's a big part of it, and I do think they'll end up keeping six because, you can use those last couple in so many different ways, and I think at this point they've got so much talent in that room that, it's wise to keep some of those guys on the payroll rather than risk losing them on waivers or whatever. Miles Boykin and Hakeem Butler, they're probably competing, and I guess Cody White to a degree as, depth receivers, but also gunners. They love what Boykin can do. He was arguably their best special teamer all around last season. I think that's going to be a big obstacle for somebody like Butler who, he's going to make some great catches on offense from the quarterbacks and in the red zone, but is he going to do everything asked of him by Danny Smith and those guys? So that's tricky. Calvin Austin, they've always liked what he can do, I think, with the ball in his hands as a punt returner. Will he also get that opportunity as a kick returner, or could that be the route for somebody like Jordan Bird, who was really good at that at San Diego State? So that'll be a puzzle that they have to figure out at receiver. Gunnar Osheski, I guess he could stick around. He's a good locker room guy. He's had been reliable on returns until that Patriots game last year that, they kind of pulled the plug on that. But I think with Austin, Allen Robinson, Deontay Johnson, George Pickens, they're going to be the guys that you see out there for the most part in their personnel groupings. And those last couple spots, you better do the dirty work, do the little things if you're going to make this team and even have a shot to stick around and score some touchdowns or get some targets.
I'm with you there because you're going to do a lot there. Because here's the other thing. I'm not so sure there's going to be that many targets for the fifth and sixth wide receiver option.
There might not be that many targets for the third and fourth receivers if you've got Pat Freiermuth, Najee Harris lining up out wide. Yeah, it's and you're running the ball a decent amount.
Exactly. That's where I honestly feel like the fifth and sixth wide receiver guys, you just better be good at special teams because you're not seeing the field unless there's like a rush of injuries. And even in that situation, I don't think the Steelers throw enough this year to make it there. Because if you think about how many pass catchers they'll have, Deontay Johnson, George Pickens, Najee Harris, Pat Freiermuth, there's your top four. And then you might even throw in if Darnell Washington or Zach Gentry become the number two tight end, they might be the next guy in line before a
Hunter Hayward's probably their second best pass catching tight end. Exactly. You call him whatever you want.
Right. Yeah. He call him the X Factor. You can just do whatever you want. But you're talking about five or six guys there. And then you're going to get eventually to the third wide receiver, let alone the fourth and fifth wide receivers. And that's where I'm just like, I think that, everyone's going to be wondering, okay, can Hakeem Butler do this? Hakeem Butler better learn how to block, better learn how to hit, better learn how to play on special teams. Because to me, that's how he's going to earn his keep. And I honestly think that part of what you see his problems coming into the Steelers where he wasn't consistent with his hands, couldn't do to, he was really good when everything worked out. And there were times where like, man, that's the prototype right there. That's what you want in a wide receiver. But the problem was he couldn't do it consistently enough and he wasn't good at other jobs. So he was just taking up a roster spot to not be consistent enough to do anything else. So I truly think the answer to those guys wanting to make the team, be a good return man or be someone who can help Danny Smith somewhere on special teams. And then when your number is called as a wide receiver, make some plays in the game. But I just feel like they might get 10 opportunities all year with the way that this offense is probably going to work with running the football and all the other targets they're going to prioritize.
All right, now do we have time to discuss new long snapper Rex Sunahara and his op time compared to Christian Kuntz, or do you have to get over to Andrew Destin now?
We could, if you so want to talk long snappers, we have about a, we have 60 seconds, so hit me with it, Brian.
I honestly thought you were just going to transition that it's time to talk Buccos. I've got nothing on the long snap battle, but you know, keep your eyes open in Latrobe for the competition there between a Duquesne man and a West Virginia man.
Ooh, that's a good rivalry to have. Who does Pitt root for in that situation?
Duquesne, I think, for sure. Like Pitt Duquesne's a friendly, friendly rival. You know, they don't even play anymore in men's basketball and I guess football. And I've always thought it'd be fun for them to play each other, but it doesn't look like that's getting scheduled anytime soon. So those are kind of like two factions in a cold war there. Whereas Pitt and West Virginia are very much at each other's throats now every year.
Not to besmirch the long snapping position, because it's a very important position when you don't have it and then you all of a sudden need it. But shout out to my old high school coach, Don Schmidt. He was a great long snapper for Edinburgh back in the day. But let's switch over to the Buccos in a sec here. We got Andrew Destin, who's in Miami checking out Pirates New Orleans and seeing can the Pirates bounce back. We'll talk about that here on the North Shore Drive podcast coming up next. We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We switched to Andrew Destin, who's on the road in Miami, you lucky son of a gun, being able to just hang out in Miami. But who aren't lucky are the Pirates, who have now lost 10 straight with a disappointing loss on Thursday night to the Miami Marlins. In a game that looked well in hand, they were up 4-1 in the eighth. They end up losing 6-4. Andrew, what the heck happened, man? Like, I stopped even paying attention to the game, and then I just get that ESPN alert that I'm like, they did what? And I'm just explain to our viewers and listeners, what did the Pirates do wrong here?
That's such a place to start. First you get a great start from Mitch Keller, right? I mean, the guy who's been your stopper all year long coming into the night. I think Pirates were 10-5 in starts he'd made this year, had an 8-3 record. Keller's been your ace, right? Gives you 7 strong, only gives up the 1 earned run, which, as Derek Shelton pointed out post game, yeah, probably shouldn't have given up any earned runs. The only one that came around was a leadoff double in an inning, and then Rodolfo Castro bobbled an infield single and then a sac fly, right? That was the only run that Mitch Keller gave up. He was tremendous. The problem is, unfortunately, as I feel like I'm talking about every time I come on this pod, Chris, it's the bullpen. Colin Holderman's out. Jose Hernandez is out. Rob Zastrzyzny is out. The list goes on. Johan Ramirez is in AAA now. They've demoted him for being ineffective. And so the options for Derek Shelton were few and far between, and he goes to Dowry Moretta, who for 3 quarters of the season has been tremendous. But now, after last night, it's 3 straight games in which he's given up at least 2 earned runs. Last night was 3, and in the 8th inning, Shelton turns to him. Obviously, MLB rules, now you got to face at least 3 batters. Well, Moretta did that, allowed all 3 to reach, a leadoff double from the 9-hitter, a walk, a single, loads the bases. Shelton turns to Carmen Majinski, the rookie who, making his 4th MLB appearance ever, comes into a 4-1 game with the bases juiced, gives up a single, lead trimmed down to 1, gets the next guy, and then Garrett Cooper hits a 3-run home run to put the Marlins ahead 6-4. And that's all in 4 pitches. A single, he gets the ground out, and then a home run. That's it. 4 pitches, it's done. All 4 fastballs from Majinski. The one that Cooper hit out was about a ball and a half, 2 balls below the strike zone. Didn't matter, turned on it or flipped it to right center for a go-ahead shot. And that's how you lose 10 in a row. It's incredible how baseball operates like that. It's a long season, but it feels really long for the Pirates right now is this bullpen without, you know, some of those names that I just mentioned. This is a limited cast. This is not the one that the Pirates anticipated to be rolling with in June, certainly not at the beginning of the season. And these injuries and the ineffective pitching has turned to some new guys being used in roles. And look, I like Carmen Majinski a lot. That's a really tough spot for a young guy who's just making his 4th appearance. And just a really a loss that hurts for the Pirates. That feels a little bit more than just 1-0 in the L column.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about you with you next. They are now, they're still 4th in division because the St. Louis Cardinals are so bad. They had such a bad start to their season, but they've fallen so far. They're now 5.5 games out of first place in the NL Central, 10 straight losses puts them in a tough place. And the way they lost this game just I, from the outside looking in, I went back and I look at this and I'm like, man, like that had to hurt. Like that had to be a problem. And it makes me wonder, you know, I've seen a lot of the just sports across all leagues that losses like that can sometimes break a team. Or at least you know stun them and keeps and kind of ruins their focus for a while. What was your vibe when you talked to some of these players in the clubhouse afterwards?
Well, I think it's just that it felt like more than just a loss. And I think you know guys who these are baseball players, right? They understand the magnitude of an 162 game season. Never get too high, never get too down. Guys were down yesterday. You know, Mitch Keller talked about it post game about how he really wanted to get this one. Obviously, he wants to get every start, but he understands his role as, you know, the stopper for the team, the guy who comes through. You know, earlier in the year, back in May, was, you know, came through in a long losing streak the Pirates had then. I believe that was a 7 or 8 game skid that they had. Looking at that, stretching from beginning of end of April to beginning of May, Mitch came in and threw a shutout against the Rockies, right? Like, that was – Keller was trying to do that again. And he felt the onus of this one, so I think – you look up and down throughout the clubhouse, guys are pretty devastated. This is a group that just wanted to get on the bus, get back to the hotel, and try and figure it out tomorrow. But I think they understood how this was a missed opportunity, given who was on the mound, what kind of performance they got out of Keller, and what this kind of means for the rest of the series. Because this is a good Marlins team. I mean, you look at it, this is a team that's right now in a playoff spot, competing very well in the National League East, one that you know has the Phillies, has the Mets, teams that have maybe underperformed a little bit. The Marlins have overperformed, even with a guy like Sandy Alcantara, who is an El Cy Young Award winner last year. He's underperforming, but the rest of the team is exceeding expectations. I think the Pirates recognize that they really let one get away last night, and they're staring 3 more games down their throats tonight, obviously, Saturday and Sunday in Miami against a good club. So this was probably their best shot at getting at least one win. It's going to be tough business the rest of the way, and I think this team is just, you know, to kind of extrapolate this to the bigger theme is I think this team is starting to recognize that maybe that month of April was a little bit more of an aberration than we originally thought. After that 20-8 start, the Pirates, 14-32, only two teams in MLB. Jeez. Yeah, only two teams in Major League Baseball have fewer wins than them. That's the Kansas City Royals and the Oakland A's, each with 13. The Pirates run differential, if you want to go that far, minus 43. That's the worst in the NL Central. Only two teams in the National League, Washington Nationals and the Colorado Rockies, have worse run differentials. So I think as the law of averages indicate, you play enough games, eventually you start to recognize what team you are. Things are not trending in the right direction for this team. And I think everybody around the club kind of knows that and realize I'm rambling a little bit talking about this club. But
you're fine.
It's just the direction things are going. There's no signs that point to this getting remedied anytime soon. And I think everybody is aware of that and is in need of, you know, something. Henry Davis gave you some life yesterday with his first career home run. They're going to need more of that. They're going to need more Key Brian Hayes home runs. They're going to need Kutch back in the lineup like he was last night. But Brian Reynolds is on the 10-day IL. Who knows how long he's going to be out. Things are not trending in the right direction. And it's problematic if you're the Pirates, man. This is a tough time in Pirates land.
It's a very tough time, and it's crazy because, like you said, we knew that April wasn't the real Pirates. There's no way that they could have sustained that pace for long. But I don't think we saw them falling this far this fast. I thought eventually they would even out and that they'd be like a little bit under 500. And I mean, I guess they kind of still are. They're only 6 games back of 500. But when you lose games like this, it's a signal that I think more losses like that could be right around the corner and that this could be a further problem. Like you said, their stopper, Mitch Keller, he gave them the performance that you wanted from him and you still blew it. And now it makes you wonder how far do they fall down the rankings here and how far does their margin from below 500 continue to grow? And that's what people were hoping this year's Pirates wouldn't get into, and that the veterans they brought around, but granted, a lot of the veterans that they need aren't, you know, available. You know, Brian Reynolds went on the IL list. Andrew McCutchen's been dealing with injuries. Carlos Santana's kind of been the guy that they've had to rely on, but this is a team that was supposed to be able to, you know, have some production for some of their better players. And Reynolds, even before he was injured, wasn't exactly giving them the numbers that you really wanted from him. And so I think that they're just in a tough position right now where they have to find a way to just at least survive and get and kind of stop the bleeding going into the All-Star break next month, and then see if coming out of that, maybe they can at least get back to playing closer to 500 ball, and then hope that they get some, get like a run on something later in the year. Again, this is the team, and I've been saying this all along, this was not a team that we were expecting to actually be a playoff team, even when they were leading a bad NL Central division. But this was a team that a lot of us were hoping would be the signal that, hey, something better is coming around the corner, like the 2011, 2012 Pirates before they went on the runs in the last decade or so. It was that the signal like, hey, there's a young core here and they've learned how to win through these tough moments. I'm not so sure that this young core is going to learn too much if they just keep tanking the way they have the last 2 months. Do you see any potential for something like that coming, maybe not like right now, but the talent that was here, if guys can get healthy, if they can get back the right people, is there something for the Pirates to kind of fight for to make this season not a lost one if they were to continue on this trajectory?
Yeah, I think so. And I think there's a couple of ways to go about that, right? One is you wait until the injured guys get healthy, and a couple other names to throw out there. I mean, one, G-Man Choi, if there's any good positive injury news that the Pirates got, it's that he started a rehab assignment last night in Altoona. That's expected to probably be about a 5 to 7 game rehab stint. Hypothetically, nothing confirmed there. But he's been out for over 2 months with that left Achilles strain. So
yeah,
you're hoping that his bat returns to the lineup, provides some power, provides some juice there. So that's one thing you point to and say, okay, well, that can help a lineup, help Carlos Santana take some stuff off his plate. But eventually the conversation has to turn to, when do you let the young guys go? When do you call up the Quinn Priesters? When do you go to Nick Gonzalez? And that's not me trying to feed into the concept of, okay, well, the season is lost. But I think that goes to the point of the first 2 months, the thought was, okay, get it to June, see what the young guys can do, and let them eat. I think we're starting to trend closer to that conversation. And we've seen it with Henry Davis, right? I mean, the Pirates for good majority of 2 months were trying to get him as many catching reps as possible. They gave him those, but eventually got to the point where it was, okay, we're going to, address the catching, improve that at the big league level without it necessarily being game repetitions. We just want his bat in the lineup because the bat is big league ready. I think the conversation becomes, at what juncture is it time to get some of those guys in AAA, whether that's a Nick Gonzalez, whether that's trying out a Jared Triolo at shortstop, where they've gotten him some time. He's a natural third baseman, but obviously blocked there by Ke'Bryan Hayes. So it could be elevating either Gonzalez or Triolo. Maybe it's just holding out and waiting until O'Neill Cruz comes back. I don't know what the right answer is, but the thing is that there are questions that can be asked and I think will be asked. And for the Pirates, it's figuring out how do you address those issues over the next month or two leading into that trade deadline. And also, how do you approach a guy like a Rich Hill? Right. I mean, a month ago, we're having this conversation. It's how do you get another Rich Hill? Right. How do you get another veteran starter who can be a back end guy that consistently gives you 5-6 innings, 2 earned runs, 3 earned runs? Now the conversation becomes, are you dealing him? Are you moving him? Are you moving a Carlos Santana to a contender that wants a veteran bat at the corner who can play pretty good defense, as we saw last night? I mean, he's done that all season, but I think yesterday was representative of what Santana does provide in terms of first base defense. That's all to say that there are some conversations and some decisions that General Manager Ben Cherington and the Pirates franchise as a whole kind of need to make here pretty soon, because the trade deadline is looming.
It's coming, yeah.
Yeah, a little over a month. It's decision time, and I think this team is kind of starting to show you what it is. Obviously, being 6 games under .500, this little stretch here, this road trip, the quick homestand, and then the series out in Los Angeles against a very good Dodgers team and similarly against a very good Diamondbacks team. I think after that point, going into the All-Star break and then starting it up with the Giants coming to town in Pittsburgh, we're going to get a really good idea real soon of what this Pirates team is and what those next steps are going to be. It's kind of holding pattern right now, just kind of hang tight and see what you have. But man, it might be pretty soon to let the young guys eat. It's just a matter of when they are ready and who those guys are, whether that's addressing the pitching help or getting a few position players up here.
I hear you, man. I really do. And it's a position where I think Pirates fans are hoping to not be for the first time in a while, but they are very close to being that. We'll keep track of that here. Andrew Destin, he's on the road covering the Pirates 4-game series against the Miami Marlins in Miami. Jason Mackey is back home, and they will be continuing their tag team coverage of the Pittsburgh Pirates and how things continue to go for them. Thank you, Andrew, for all your good coverage. Get all his coverage as well as all of our coverage at post-gazette.com, covering all things Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh sports. I'm Chris Carter, host of the North Shore Drive podcast. Thanks again for tuning in with us on a Friday. Everyone, thanks also to Brian Batko for talking Steelers with us. We'll be back Monday with more on all things Pittsburgh sports, seeing how the Pirates did in Miami and how things are looking for the Steelers as they continue through the offseason. All that and more here on the North Shore Drive podcast. We'll see you Monday when we resume the show after the weekend. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you're watching this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our YouTube channel. For 6 months of digital access to post-gazette.com for just $6, click the link down below in the description.